You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Savage Arms. Now, Savage has come out with a new model, and that model is the 110 Ultralight. At under 6 pounds, the 110 Ultralight is designed to combat elevation and the elements while maintaining the performance of a factory blueprinted Savage 110 Action. This comes in a variety of calibers. It has a gray AccuFinish stock with adjustable comb height. This is an awesome rifle, and basically Savage is at it again. These guys have done amazing things in the past, and now they're doing amazing things in the future. If you want to find out more information about the 110 Ultralight, visit savagearms.com.
Welcome to the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. I'm your host, Nate Thomas. Today, Andy and I talk with Scott Wilper. Scott is another good old Missouri boy who owns a custom turkey call shop. So today we talk some turkey with him and go over some hunts he's been on, some cool memorable hunts he's done. We talk about his calls and what he thinks goes into a good call. Some specifics about turkey. And some of these competitions Scott goes to where he makes some sounds with his mouth that I still am amazed that he can make. So it's a great episode, a lot of fun, a lot of really cool stories. So I hope you enjoy it. This is the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Here with my co-host Andy today.
What's up, man? How's it going?
And today we're going to be, I know it's a little late. We started our show on Memorial Day, so it was after turkey season was already over here in Missouri. But I didn't really want to go a full year without talking about turkey before next spring.
Absolutely.
So I knew when I started this show, I talked to one of my buddies, and I knew I wanted to have this guy on. And so today on the show, we have with us Scott Wilper. Scott, what's going on, man?
How's it going out there, everybody?
So Scott is an awesome hunter. He's a turkey hunter and a deer hunter and all kinds of stuff. He also is owner of a custom call shop. And so, Scott, why don't you introduce yourself to everybody, where you're from, and then why don't you tell us, since we know you love turkey, what is your favorite thing to do other than turkey hunting?
Well, we always got to start off like that. You know, we could even auction something. I'm at a 1, 2, 3, $3, $4, but a 4.5, 4, turkey ware, 4, turkey nine, get bomb. Anyway, yeah, I'm Scott Wilper here in Wilper Custom Calls, and I build box calls. It started out just building a few and paying bills because we were way behind, and I do it out of, it isn't for the money, it's for the passion. I do it all for passion. So it's been quite a ride, but I love to build turkey calls for people, and there's heirlooms, there's calls I've built for memorials for people. So it is a good thing for people to for gifts, but actual turkey calling is the fun part about it. And I love to train people on how to run box calls, how to cluck, how to yelp, how to purr, how to do it all. And I do have a few videos out on that, but I'm new at this. I'm old school, and I love to have a good time. But what I love to do other than turkey hunting is take my girls trout fishing at Bennett Springs.
Absolutely.
That's pretty awesome.
If you've ever been down there, it's an awesome park to go to. So
yes, it is.
Y'all did not know that was going to be my answer, did you?
Well, I did not.
I'm good friends with his brother, and Jeff loves doing that too. And my dad's a big fly fisherman. He goes down there all the time. So I didn't know you did it too, so that's pretty cool.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I didn't take you to the other room to show you the trout.
I was going to say, given the turkey on the wall here, I don't want to see the size of trout you've got.
There's another room, Andy. We just didn't go into.
Oh my Lord! Yeah. So before we get going, I'm going to tell a quick story. So, like I was saying, I grew up with Scott's younger brother Jeff, and Jeff and I have been friends for as long as I can remember. I remember looking up to Scott when we were kids.
He's coach up to everybody.
Well,
football.
You look at this guy right here. He was one of the best football players I've ever seen in my life.
Coached you all. Yeah.
Yep. So Jeff and I grew up together, and we've been friends ever since high school. And unfortunately, Jeff and I lost one of our close friends about a year ago, a little over a year ago, to a tragic car accident. And about a year after his death, we had a there was a memorial auction put on for him, and Scott made two calls for that auction and donated them for the auction, and it was pretty awesome. So that we thank you for that.
Yeah.
And what was even cooler is, you know, you're talking about a turkey call. One was a pocket rocket. One was a regular size call that he
long
makes.
Box. Yeah.
And I thought I had the pocket rocket one. I think I bid like $200 or something like that. And one of our other good friends, Derek, bid $500 on that thing. So
you're not bitter at all, are you?
No, I'm not bitter.
Okay.
I think that's pretty awesome.
That's absolutely
awesome.
That he
did that. And, you know, so those two calls that Scott donated raised, you know, almost $1,000 probably.
That's
for
amazing.
That. I don't know how much the other one went for, to be honest with you. But and what was even more cool is after it was over, Scott actually made Jeff and I the same commemorative thing for Cecil. So
awesome.
I now have a pocket rocket for Cecil's memory for, you know, forever, and I probably will never use it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It's probably
I wondered if y'all would ever take it out in the woods or not.
No, Jeff and I talked about it when he brought it to me, and I said it's number one, they're too beautiful.
Yeah.
Even if it wasn't a commemorative one, they're so dang beautiful that it's hard to use them in the first place. But
right.
That one probably won't ever get used, to be honest with you. But so we really appreciate you doing that. And I wanted you on the show before that, and then obviously that made me want to talk to you even more. So anyway, really appreciate it.
And you're welcome. I enjoyed making them.
Yeah.
I think something like that really talks to how near and dear, you know, outdoor activities and things can be to people. I mean, something like that, you know, to memorize somebody or, you know, to commemorate someone holds a special place. I mean, obviously innate in your heart for your friend, and you know, in other cases, Scott, you just showed us another series you're making for someone else to make memories, and that's what a lot of the outdoors,
right,
what we like talking about is making memories with family and friends. And you talked about going, you know, trout fishing with your girls, and that's the outdoors. That's getting out, making memories. It's not about killing stuff.
I mean,
it's about making the memories with the people you love and doing those things.
That's why I build the calls. There is money in it, but to be honest, I could care less.
Absolutely.
It isn't about the money. I have a job. You know, in the very beginning, the first 20 calls saved my house.
Yep.
But it isn't about the money. It's the stories I hear every year. And I've got so many stories that just makes the hair on your arm stand up. And it is. It's about the memories, and that's one reason I love to make them.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The thing about your calls are they really are a work of art. So it's really it's easy to turn that work of art into something that people can remember as part of their outdoor experience. I mean, that's half the reason we started this podcast in general, is to talk about. I mean, we always sit there and talk about stories and what people do, and I'll sit there and listen to a guy like you for 3 hours tell me all his different stories because I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided, well, maybe we should just start recording this shit.
Yeah. Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
So
you don't want to trade passion in for glory.
Nope.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've been offered two companies have wanted to pay. They've wanted 5,000 calls a year. So, there goes the passion right out the window.
Yeah, when you're doing that much.
When you're trying to do that much, I can't make them by hand. These are all made by hand, one at a time, blood, sweat, and tears. I know every call, you know, it's 3 hours to make one.
Yep. And you just showed us your shop, and there's no
There ain't nothing fancy out there,
yeah,
is
yeah,
there?
Yeah, no, it's all chisels and sanders. Absolutely.
Yeah, handmade stuff you can always tell.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And the quality that goes in them. But, you know, somebody wanting 5,000 calls a year with my name on it, there goes passion right out the window.
Yep.
It's just a glory thing at that point. And you're not going to get the memory stories.
Right.
Yeah. So you kind of told it when you first started, but, you know, this started off as you told us before we started recording, but this started off as I'm just going to go try a call, and you told us a funny story about your first call didn't even make a sound.
Yeah.
But
that's my wife's favorite call. A soundless turkey call. She said that's the best one I've ever made. So that was number one, and all that did was just put the fire in me to figure out what angle of the dangle's going on here, the radius, what wood goes with what for the best sound. And, you know, the first 10 calls went into the stove, and I make all my calls by hand right next to a stove and with that fire going. And if I don't like it, do I think it'll kill a turkey? Yes. I think any of them will. You can go to Walmart and buy one.
Mm-hmm.
It'll kill a turkey. But is it perfect? Perfect to my ears. If I do absolutely, for some reason, don't like it the slightest little bit, I throw it right in the fire. Because I want everybody to have the best that I can produce.
Yeah. That.
That's the passion coming out.
That's the best
right
way
here
to do it.
That's that personal experience. I mean, you get that extra quality because it's the passion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Well, and it helps that when you started doing this, you were a turkey hunter. You know, when you already have
right.
a passion to do a sport,
right?
It's a lot easier. You know, if I told you, well, I want you to start making batting gloves for baseball, and you don't care for that sport, which you might, but we're just making it up
yeah.
right now.
Yeah.
It don't seem very fun to
it's
do.
It's hard to get the drive.
Yeah. So it's easier to do something like that, and we know that you're a turkey hunter.
yeah.
So.
The turkeys know it too.
I want to hear a story before we get into anything.
I agree.
What's your? I mean, you've killed probably more birds than I've ever seen in my life. But do you have a certain hunt that's ever stuck out to you? That
oh well, they all have. They're all. There's so many. There's you. When you leave the woods, I've killed my fair share. I want to say that. But I still to this day. Every hunt, I learn something from it. If you're not learning something from every hunt, then you're not doing it correctly. You shouldn't even be out there then.
Right.
These things have a pea-sized brain, and they will beat you every time. A gobbler has to win every day.
Mm-hmm.
You only have to win once.
Yep.
Yeah.
If you think about that. Season's 21 days long. He's got to win every single time, and you only got to win once.
One day, yeah.
And his brain's the size of a pea, and how come he beat you? And all that does
makes
is
you feel bad about yourself.
Maybe I should have went to college more or something. You know, you can't.
Yeah.
How does this happen? Ask yourself, why? Why did he gobble and go the other way? Why are they not gobbling this morning? Or why are they gobbling their heads off this morning?
Yep.
Why did that hen, you know, I ask myself that on every hunt and learn something from it. So they're all memorable to me. But I would have to say my most memorable hunt would be Anderson County, Kansas. The bird's right above you, Andy. He's got 5 beards.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
I won a hunt.
I'd put my back to that thing or I'll stare at it the whole time.
I won a hunt at the NWTF show. I can't remember, 5 or 6 years ago, let's say. But we won a hunt. It was an auctioned-off hunt. We won this hunt. So I went down there to this ranch, and the outfitter's driving us around. And he's got 900 acres here, and he kind of shows us the border, and 200 here. And I think we had access to another 120. And he said, there's birds on all of this. You guys got 3 days to hunt and come back to the lodge, you know, at night. And then that's when he said, oh, there's one more place to hunt. I'll take you down here. It's only a 40-acre track, and this is out in the middle of Kansas. There wasn't even a tree on the entire 40 acres.
Oh,
just, a small little ditch. And when you look at this 40-acre square, within a mile of any direction, there's no trees, no creek. There's a gobbler that stands in the middle of this 40-acre field about 10 a.m., anywhere from 8 to 10 a.m. He shows up. They don't know where he comes from, but he'll be out there strutting every single day. We've had a dozen people in the last few weeks try to hunt him and try to kill him. He's been shot at twice. But I'll show you this 40-acre track, and you guys can also hunt that. He goes, but I do not want you, because just because you'll see this bird, I don't want you wasting your 3 days
right
on this bird, because you have 1,000 acres that I just showed you private to go get your birds and make you a memorable hunt.
Mm-hmm.
So we pull up there, and I'll be dang if he wasn't standing right out in the middle of the field. And they named him the push broom turkey.
I can see why.
Right, right, with 5 beards sticking out. But yeah. From the truck, it just looked like a massive push broom coming out of his chest. Yep. But the outfitter said he can't be killed. And then my buddy started laughing, and the outfitter said, what are you laughing at? And he said, well, you don't know who's sitting behind you.
You said the wrong words.
You just said the wrong words. He'll spend 3 days on this bird till he kills him. Yep. So it was a very memorable hunt. Well, the next morning, I sat up in the ditch. I had a little bush the size of a backpack in front of me, and that's it. And sat there motionless, made a few calls. There isn't a tree for a mile. I didn't hear no gobbling or nothing.
Did you have any decoys?
No decoys. I just sat there in the ditch and just winging it. I'm going to waste my first morning on this bird. And see, you know, turkey hunting too, luck has a lot to play with things too. But, you know, play your percentages and put yourself in the right spot to be lucky.
Right,
if that makes sense. Anyway, 9 a.m. rolls around, and I see this black thing coming across the field. Well, son of a gun. Here he is. This guy's not lying. Every day he shows up, but don't know where he comes from. So he comes out in the field there. He's about 100 yards out, and I'm just sitting there with very little cover. I don't know how I'm not even busted to begin with, but I had a little pocket rocket. Of course, the style's changed a little bit. They're a little bit bigger than the first ones I ever made, but it was walnut with yellow heart paddle, so it's a real high-pitch, demanding yelp.
Mm-hmm.
And I let him know I was over there, and then it was just a lot of clucking and soft yelping. And knowing that he's been shot at twice and called at and hunted a bunch, I just toned it way down and just let him know I'm over here whether you like it or not. But I just kept it simple. I didn't overcall. Overcalling is a big thing that a lot of hunters do.
I would say I'm in that category.
It will kill your hunt. Overcalling is bad. But just, you know, the good Lord was on my side. A few yelps, a lot of clucking, and just sat there. I had mosquitoes biting me in this ditch. I'm trying to blow them off my eyebrow. Anyway, as soon as he hit, I'm going 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 48, 46. Good enough. Boom. So I call the outfitter up. And I tell him to come get me because my buddy is on that 1,000 acres, a couple miles down the road. I don't want to ruin his hunt. And can you come get me? And he said, well, yeah, I'll come down and get you. Where do you want to go? I said, just back to the lodge. And
you didn't give it away, did you?
He goes, you killed him, didn't you? You killed him, didn't you? I said, yeah, he's down. He's down. I'll tell you why his name, the push broom turkey, is he's got 5 beards. Oh, my gosh. So. Anyway, that was a memorable hunt. But, yeah, we can go on and on and on about hunts. And I love them all. But
well, I listened to another podcast the other day, which was the perfect excuse to get a mount. When you're talking to your wives about spending that $600 or whatever, no matter if it's a deer or a turkey or
Amy,
a bobcat.
Amy knows these, yes.
And he said, I get mounts because it's entertainment for the rest of my life.
Oh,
every time I look at that mount, I replay
the hunt
that day, and I'll never forget it. And until the day I die, I'm going to look at that deer or that turkey that's sitting right above Andy right now, and it gives me the goosebumps.
I got him right now thinking of that, yeah.
It gives me the same adrenaline rush that I had seeing that animal in front of me that day.
Right.
And that's why I think, you know, and the other thing is, and I'm big on this, is respecting the animal you harvested.
Oh, yeah.
And,
definitely.
You know, I remember I mounted a deer last year or 2 years ago that didn't score more than 130, but he was a deer I'd known, and I actually didn't think he was the deer I shot, but when we found him, He was, and he suffered in his death, which is not what you want.
Right.
And because of that, I said, you're going to live on forever. And he got mounted. He got a full mount. And, you know, it's about respecting that animal yep. a lot of times. So, you know, I think that's a cool story.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't be able to done it. I guarantee you that.
Was your heart beating out of your chest?
Sure.
Well, then.
Every time I listen to one, it does.
What I say in the whitetail episode, it doesn't matter what the score is. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, what it does that, in that case, deer.
Yep.
Give me that adrenaline rush. Get my heart pumping, beating. I don't care how much he scores.
Yeah.
Do I get that feeling? Mm-hmm. And then that's what it's about.
That's why you hunt right there.
Yep. And, the outdoors is – some people don't understand that. There's people that don't hunt, that don't do outdoor activities, that think we're, you know, bad for killing animals and things like that. And you don't understand how much we care about that animal that we're harvesting. And just because we're killing it don't mean we don't love what that is.
Right.
And we, you know, we eat the meat and we don't waste things and stuff like that. It's just how we are. So, yeah. And I have a feeling if I ask you to tell me another story,
we're going to be here for a minute.
Because there's another turkey right behind me that I'd like to know that story too. Is that the double 11?
No.
Or is that one?
That's 10-inch beard, 11-inch beard, and 11-inch beard.
Even bigger.
It's bigger than the other one. Yeah. That one I haven't got back yet. That's the turkey I hunted last year, which, you know, I could tell you that story, or we can wait to another episode.
Nah, go ahead and tell it.
The bird last year, on day one, he steps out. Five jakes were coming in. I had my decoys out. And I usually only run with a hen. I don't get into the full gobbler setup most of the time. I have put them out, but I've had gobblers in the past step out that are nice, mature gobblers. They see the big strutter, and they just leave.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a mature gobbler that you could have killed, and he left me. So I just usually do one hen or nothing. And sometimes I'll do a jake, but it's a hen or nothing, and once in a while a jake. So I had this hen out, and here comes five jakes. And the bird I was working steps out about 40 yards to the right in the brush, and all I could see is the double beards and monster spurs. I'm looking at them with binoculars.
Yeah.
There's no shot there at all. I mean, it had been – some people may have took the shot. I could have wounded it. He needed to take two more steps out to be a clear shot in the open. But anyway, so I'm looking at this bird through the brush. Give me two more steps in your mind, and I could see the giant spurs on him. I could see a double 11-inch beard coming out of him, and he had the big monster double D chest is what I always named it. So, you know, this bird, when they have a chest that boils out and around like a beer belly or like I've got a pork butt belly here is what I've got. But, when you see that, that's a bird that's 24 pounds or more when you see that hump there. And he had that. So he stops, and these five jakes come into the setup. Well, he is not going to come out.
Right.
He'll mess with one jake. But five jakes,
they
five
got him outnumbered,
five to one, it's not happening. So, and I had him beat. I beat him that day.
Mm-hmm.
Right there, I beat him. But, again, a turkey has to win every time. You only have to win once.
Yep.
He turns around, goes the other way, and then I have to watch these jakes for the next hour, which was fun and cool. But that's when it became a personal vendetta that I am going after this bird until the day I kill him. Well, it took 10 days, and I hunted every morning, and I came in through the creeks. You know, I do have to work, so I'd sneak out at 9:30 or 10 a.m., and I'd take the creek back out so I didn't ruin or bust the bird. You run them out of the area a couple times. They'll move.
Right.
They'll move to the neighbor's farm or wherever. So, you know, I'm trying to play my cards right, but, during that 10-day stretch, I called two gobblers in that were nice adult, you know, 20, 21-pound gobblers. I'd be proud to have any other time, but it just made it he got personal with me.
Oh, yeah.
And every day he would beat me. I kept saying that to myself. He's got to win every time. I only got to win once. Don't quit.
Yeah.
So, day 10, You know, and during that 10-day stretch, three times he would be out there 80 to 100 yards. He'd come in. He would gobble. Here I am. Come on. He's doing what he's supposed to do.
Yep. Yeah.
They gobble for a reason. I gobble so the hen comes to the gobbler. You're trying to reverse nature, make him so lovesick he comes to you. Well, he's doing – usually that's a sign of an older bird when they're doing that. So he comes in 80 to 100 yards, gobbles at me a dozen times, puts on a show, and then leaves. It's eating at you more,
He knows I'm sitting here apparently.
Right,
just messing with me.
And your heart's pumping every time.
So day 10, I call a hen in. I call another hen in. I had two hens out in front of me, and I had a hen decoy. And I started mocking them. I would mock this one, mock that one. I was playing a box call and a mouth call. I wasn't a blind this time, and that's mm-hmm. probably what saved me. I was running a box call and a mouth call. I was running a box call repeating one hen and running a mouth call repeating this other hen. And as I was repeating these hens back and forth, note for note, I mean just mimicking. Huh. Five yelps, I would yelp five times. She'd start cutting, I'd start cutting. And sooner or later, it's just like a kid. When a kid starts mocking you. Mm-hmm. At first, it's funny. But, you know, 5 minutes later of them repeating you, you're like, shut up, be quiet.
Right.
Yep.
You can't take it no more. So, evidently, me mocking these hens, they started fighting. They were wrestling. They were wrapping their necks around each other like an arm wrestling match, pushing back and forth.
That's cool.
Jumping up and throwing legs at each other. I mean, they don't have spurs, but they were – it just a big, massive fight broke out, and here he was at 100 yards. And when the fight broke out, his fan came down, and I said, it's going to happen.
He came running.
He came running into the fight, and as soon as he hit 45.
Ladies.
Yeah, ladies.
There's plenty of me to go around.
Right. So that's that bird there that was last year. But it was day 10 before it happened. But, again.
How far did he come to?
Well, he probably would have came to 20, but when he hit 45, I let him have it.
That's your. Sounds like that's about your area.
That's
that
my area. And see, there's another story for another day because, Grandpa always said, when you have the shot, take it.
Yep.
Take it. And I let a bird one time come in at 45, and he wasn't running, just walking slow. So he's in my gun range. There he is at 40. Here he is at 35 finally. So now I'm sitting there thinking, all right, I'm just going to enjoy this. All of a sudden, about 30 yards, he immediately just takes off the flight.
Mm-hmm.
Heart like two steps and then flight. I had no chance to even try to pull on him to try to kill him. What just happened here? I had a dead bird at 45 or 40, whatever, and I let him come on in, pushing my luck. A bobcat comes out.
Oh.
Yep.
So then again, when you have the shot, take it.
Yeah.
Try to enjoy it, yes, to a point, but don't get too overzealous about it. And
absolutely. it's one thing about turkeys I learned when you just said that, Scott. My sons have been really into birds. We did bought a lot of different bird feeders this year, and so my wife bought them a Missouri Birds book, and the turkey's in there.
Yeah.
And in the thing it says the turkey is a very strong flyer. Other than, obviously they can't, fly around.
Distance.
Yeah. But they're very strong flight birds.
Quick to fly, yes.
Yeah. And Caden says, I didn't think turkeys could fly. I said, no, they can fly really good, really fast, and get away really quickly.
Short period of time.
And, that's a lot of people don't even know a turkey can fly.
Yeah.
But, no, they can.
A lot of people don't know they even roost in trees at night.
Yeah.
Oh, they can fly quick.
Yeah.
Just distance. Is not very, very good.
Sure.
So.
But they get out of danger is the biggest thing. Yep. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, I could probably ask you for about 14 more stories, but we'll get in, since we got to try to keep these a certain amount of time, let's get into your calls because, this is how, obviously, a lot of this started was, when we got Cecil's call, commemorative call, it made me think about, I should talk to Scott, right?
Yep.
So, you have gotten to the point now where you know a lot about the right woods, what woods work well with others, how to make a certain call, to a guy like me who doesn't know what he's doing, when you go cedar on cedar or walnut on whatever else, I don't necessarily hear much difference.
Right.
But you talk about having high pitch, low pitch, squealing.
Mm-hmm.
What goes into a good call?
Well, there's a lot goes into each call as far as the woods go. And the bottom line is it doesn't matter what you like. It's what the gobbler likes.
Right.
You know, and this is a sales pitch that me and Uncle Kenny came up with. I'm throwing you in here right now. So you get Missouri Woods and Water glory going on here. This is a sales pitch from the pocket rocket we did down at the NWTF show, and we've sold hundreds of them. It's a sales pitch, but we're speaking the truth here. And before I get into what woods I like and I think work better, they all work.
Mm-hmm.
But do you like blondes,
sure,
redheads, or brunettes?
Yes.
Consider our wives are blonde. I'm going to go with blonde.
Okay, so you're saying blonde. I mean, you're saying blonde, right?
Right,
sure.
Right? And you're saying you don't care. You like all of them.
They're all pretty.
They're all pretty,
my wife,
right?
Is blonde, but they're all pretty, right?
Exactly. This guy likes brunettes. This guy likes redheads. And this guy over here doesn't care.
Right.
It's the same in the turkey world.
Yeah.
This gobbler here likes a high pitch. This gobbler, does he like low pitch too? Yes. But high pitch turns
really
him on more.
That's,
you see where I'm going,
yeah,
with this?
Yeah,
yeah,
makes sense.
And then this gobbler likes a low pitch, and this gobbler here doesn't care. As long as it's got feathers, I'm happy.
Right.
So where I'm going with that is more than one call does help.
Mm-hmm.
A high pitch call, you know, you might get a gobble or two out of him. I call them courtesy gobbles.
That acknowledgement,
you know,
yeah.
Every 30 minutes, well, he gobbled. He answered me. But he hadn't said nothing for the next 45 minutes. And you might play that call. He does it. He's giving you a courtesy gobble, letting you know, hey, I'm over here.
Mm-hmm.
I hear you. I'm over here. Now, what about that one that went off once? Now he triple gobbles.
Yep.
5 minutes later, triple gobbles again. Maybe 10 minutes later, double gobbles. That's different than the other gobbler. This one is fired up. He likes the, say, lower pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Try a different call. I'm not saying try this call and then 5 minutes later try this next call, but switch it up a little bit and try to get into that gobbler's mind and figure out what he likes. And that is the key to killing more gobblers, is figuring out the gobbler what he likes. You know, does he like the redhead, the brunette, or the blonde?
Mm-hmm.
Or does he care?
Right.
He's the kamikaze gobbler that just runs to the gun barrel and he's dead. So, anyway.
I need to find more of them.
Yeah. But my favorite wood now, in the last 2 years, my favorite wood now is bloodwood over black limba. It is kind of on the higher end. It's not extremely high pitch, but it is high pitch. It has a lot of raspy nasal tone to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the back half drops off hard. A real hard double note.
Mm-hmm.
Turkey calling is not, it's, it's two notes. And that black limba really starts off high and drops off hard. And them gobblers this year, got two gobblers that really liked it. So black limba and bloodwood is one of my favorites. And then, of course, bloodwood and poplar has become one of our favorites. My Uncle Kenny's favorite too. It's a screamer. It's really high.
Okay.
I talked earlier there in the show on the paintbrush unkillable bird. Yellow wood over walnut is another high screamer. So again, them are combinations of wood that I've learned over 1,000 calls. What woods do what? First turkey call I ever made, the very first one, we were about to lose our home. We were behind on our electric 90 days, 60 days late on our water, and that's what started me making turkey calls. The first turkey call I ever made, I didn't know what I was doing. It was pine. I've even forgot what it was, the two woods, but it didn't make a sound where I'm going with this. And my wife says that was the best call I've ever made. Yeah, I drive her nuts with these turkey calls. But, yeah, a soundless turkey call. Imagine that. So, anyway, that's the passion that drove me to figure out what works with what. But, you cannot go wrong with red cedar. Red cedar for the sound, and purple heartwood or bloodwood over red cedar is what I would say is the low pitch, your everyday hen. You get into the walnuts and black limba, you're getting a higher pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also woods in between there. I mean, we can go on for an hour about it. But black limba is my new favorite. And poplar is hard to beat. Red cedar. I carry 3 box calls with me. 1 long box and 2 pocket rocket size boxes. So, but I make sure that they're all
different pitches.
Different pitches, exactly.
Yeah.
That's the name of the game. It's you're trying to create so much realism. You're trying to fake this bird out to his death, basically. Beat you. His pea-sized brain will beat you every single day. And you got to convince him you are the real deal.
And they don't want to die.
Exactly.
So all you got to give them is one reason not to think that's real.
Right. I'm talking extreme realism is the name of the game for turkey hunting. And you know, just one call and you go out there and yelp, 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 and he comes to you. Well, it does happen. You know, there's a difference between a turkey hunter and a turkey killer. Which one are you?
Neither.
Based on my resume, you know, I hunt the shit out of them. But,
you got to ask yourself that question, right?
Right.
You know, and every realism tactic you can throw into the mix, just I carry a wing with me, and I'll do the fly down, and then, you know, start in with the tree yelps, scraping the leaves whenever if I think he's able to can hear me, I'll scrape the leaves. They'll even gobble.
Yeah.
You're scraping the leaves on noise. You know, you add as much realism to the – you're trying to convince him this is the real thing here.
Yeah.
And it's even harder when he has a lady with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if you walked into a bar and you had 2 women under your arms and you had one over in the corner winking at you, you going to leave the 2 you already have to the one winking over in the corner? No.
It's going to be difficult.
Right.
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty tough. But what if you jack around in the bar a little bit and you go to the bathroom or something or over to the jukebox and you turn back around and them 2 women that you came in with are gone?
Yeah.
Now the one winking over in the corner looks pretty good.
Yeah. So that initial sound that she was making might not have been appealing to you. But now that the 2 hens or women are gone, now all of a sudden that sound might –
Exactly. Yep. That's what I'm saying.
You know how similar this sounds to elk hunting?
Oh, so much. So much. And that's what I've always been told, always heard, is elk hunting and turkey hunting go hand in hand. You know.
Right. Every time you go out, take something you've learned from the woods back with you. You know, we have killed, me and Uncle Kenny and my whole family. I would say, would you agree, more of your birds have died between 9 and noon than 6 and 9.
9 and noon for sure.
9 and noon for sure,
yeah.
Exactly. And between 9 and noon is when the guy in the bar turns around and the 2 he came in with are gone. So the one over there, this is looking pretty good. I better go with it. Yeah. So patience is the name of the game.
Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense. And then the other thing that goes into a call is you can't just take 2 pieces of red cedar, drive a nail in one side and think you're going to
know,
make a beautiful turkey call. That's the other stuff that you were talking about before we ever started recording.
Radius.
Yeah.
The paddle has a radius. The box has a radius. The thickness of the boxes. I'll let this information out.
Trade secret.
The thickness of my box call. The soundboard is 5/32.
I'll be danged. So, yeah, it doesn't take big old chunk of wood to do stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So, if I am a 32nd heavy, I'm going to sound more like a peacock.
It's not the sound you want. Yeah.
Right. It's a little high pitch. If I go too thin, it sounds like a barking dog.
Yeah.
And then it's like a haircut. Once you take it off, you can't put it back on there. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right into the stove it goes. There goes an hour and a half wasted, and I'd burn it, start all over. So, the name of there is a lot more science to it than just a block of wood and some chalk and.
Well, and you can tell, you know, I've actually got those Walmart calls. Nothing against companies making mass-produced
right.
calls. But
they'll kill turkeys. They will.
Absolutely.
You know, I've got probably two of them still sitting in the packaging at home that I've never used. But when Jeff, your brother Jeff, one of my good friends, brought me that pocket rocket from Cecil's Memorial that we talked about at the beginning mm-hmm. of the show, you know, I went home and I sat there and, which I'm not Scott Wilper, but I sat there and then I get out that cheap, you know, $10 call or whatever I bought from Walmart yeah. 10 years ago and hit it. And you can tell a difference.
Immediately.
Between, and my ear is not a trained ear. And you can tell a difference between quality and, you know, quantity, I guess you'd
right.
call it. And so one of the things I definitely wanted to ask you was, there's a reason why your people keep coming back and asking you to make calls for them. And, you know, you were showing us the heirloom series you're doing for that guy
yeah.
Out there. And it's because when you have passion for something, rather than trying to make money doing something,
right,
it shows.
Right. Whose quality control is better, the guy that's sitting there making them for a purpose or making them, you know, or for making them for a passion or making them for a profit?
Right.
I mean, that's the, you know.
Yeah. And it doesn't hurt to make a little money on it
oh,
either.
No,
but
absolutely. You pick up an extra blind.
Right.
Or,
yeah.
or pay for your turkey mount.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, yeah, no there doubt. Is a difference. And quality will go right out the window when they start getting mass produced.
Yeah. I could definitely see that. I mean, if they wanted me to do a podcast a day for 365 days, my quality would go from very poor to really poor. Because I don't even know if we're good yet.
We'd lose our two listeners.
Yeah. Well, Scott and Uncle Kenny said that they would.
Hey, they did. We just got two more.
Right.
We're up to
we're
four.
Up to
yeah.
four.
So for the people not listening, Scott's uncle came in about halfway through this, and now he's sitting there listening to everybody. So he's having fun listening to us talk.
Well, two and two is four in Lafayette County. So we're, yeah, we have doubled listeners.
Absolutely.
So,
50% increase in one day. That's pretty good. I mean, it's all how you do the numbers.
Can only go up from here. So that's pretty cool to hear. I mean, and one of the other things that I think sets you apart from a lot of people, I mean, there's a lot of good call makers out there.
Yes, sir.
You know, there's a lot of good guys from what I found just kind of in our area that are good call makers, but, and they might do this stuff too, but I don't know them. So one thing that's really cool with you is you do your own call making. You obviously are a turkey hunter based on the wall behind me and all over the place. You also then go and put yourself up against some of the best callers that are out there.
Oh, competition.
Yeah, yeah, I was on your Facebook page, the Wilper Custom Calls Facebook page, which we'll get people all those links at some point. But, and you had just went to the, was it the 2020 Mid-Iowa Classic?
Mid-Iowa Classic, yes.
You did that. You've been to some, the National Wild Turkey Foundation or Federation calling
yeah.
championships.
Mm-hmm.
You
the
seem to be,
championships,
I mean,
yeah.
you people have heard him already
I
on
say,
his
the,
show
the,
a couple
yeah.
times. What, how'd you get so good at doing that? I mean, you're making these sounds with your mouth.
Yeah. Well, again, Uncle Kenny sitting here behind me, it started the passion when I was 14. I was 14, and he called in a couple gobblers. A big one was coming. I shot the Jake. And if I wouldn't have shot at Jake, I probably wouldn't have got it because he'd have killed the big one. I know him. But, no, Uncle Kenny started it, and so did my dad. He brought home, again, times were different years ago, but he brought home three wild turkeys from somewhere. I was young, don't know where he got them, doesn't matter. But I raised these things. They were little. I mean, they slept yeah. with me. I let them into bed with me. I raised these things. One was a gobbler, and there were two hens.
Hmm.
Well, the gobbler made it about a year, and then he died of a disease or whatever. But the hens lived to be 5-6 years old, and they would just follow me around on the farm. Everywhere
really?
I'd go, they would go. And they'd come into the – they'd try to come in the house. Obviously, when they got bigger, we didn't let them in the house no more, but they'd try to come in the house.
Yeah.
Right.
It was like I was their mother, so to speak. But that's how it all started, was me mimicking when I raised them, when I would mimic them by voice. And then the hoot owl came in afterwards, too. That was from Uncle Kenny's learning how to hoot owl call and just trying to practice and take it to the next level and compete in national contests.
Yeah.
But,
that's awesome. I like competitions. That's what I mean. Doing it, that it makes you better at things.
Right. It all started from listening to my uncle, Al Hoot, and then the voice turkey calling part came from my dad raising these little ones up to adult and repeating them.
Yeah. Just being around them.
Yeah, just.
That's better than I can do with a call.
By the way, people, he did not just hit play on a radio. That was Scott's mouth.
There's no call in his mouth. There's no. That's just him making noise with his mouth.
But that's kind of how it all started. And then I loved it so much. You know, the more you put into something, the more you get out of it.
Well, and
absolutely.
It's, that's with anything. Once again, life. This mimics elk hunting so much because I'll sit there with my elk bugle. We go out west every year and try to chase them in the mountains. Don't ever succeed very often, but we try. And I'll sit there outside at our house and bugle and just bugle and bugle and then go back and listen to or watch a YouTube video of Corey Jacobson, who's the best elk caller ever, at one of his competitions. And I'll listen to him and I'll stop and I'll go back outside and try to sound that way.
Yeah.
It never works, but you know,
you're
not going to get better not doing it.
Right. You got to practice.
Yeah. So I could see where this becomes almost like an addiction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where now I got to be better than you at it. If I'm going to do it, now I'm going to be better than other people.
Yeah.
And I just saw that you went to that Mid-Iowa Classic, and then there's different divisions. There's, you know, I saw a hunter division.
Yeah.
What's some of the different divisions and some of them calling?
They have the senior division is mostly, they call it like a senior open division. And that's, you don't have to live in Iowa. It's open to anybody that wants to get in, but it's also mainly the mouth call is what that division is. Then you have a friction division, and that's with your pot calls and box calls. And then the hunter division is, again, anything goes. Hunter division is labeled as you've never taken first place at nationals.
Okay.
Or wait a minute. You've never qualified for nationals. Let me get that right. Which is for the friction, then you can get is the hunter division. So then you have the owl hooting division. There's youth divisions, but I've always gotten in the owl hooting division contest in Nashville and been doing that. I think I've gotten national contests 8 times now.
And that's the NWTF National Convention Contest, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right. They call
how many guys are typically entering those?
There's the World Championship. You know, there's the Nationals. There's the U.S. Open type, you know, and then you have the state contest. So there's a lot of different contests.
Does Missouri do something as far as you know?
Yeah, I missed, and that's how I ended up in Iowa. I kind of invented my own. I've been getting in the owl hooting contest at Nationals, the national contest, and I do it by voice. So,
right.
But I keep taking 12th and 15th and 16th place. And
out of how many, by curiosity?
There was 26
at
the Nationals this year. So, you know, I'm landing right in the middle, but everyone uses calls. I wish they would have their own division.
Told you.
Their own mouth, you know, voice calling division, but they don't.
Yeah.
They just don't. A natural voice. So.
I told Andy we had to take a break a little while ago. Scott's smoking some meat, and we had to take a break so he could go change it. And while Scott was out there, I told Andy, you need to go watch Scott's video at the Nationals. He's the only guy there that's not using something.
Right.
He's using his hands and his mouth. That's
right.
It. And I said I wonder, you know, if there's some differences between those sounds those people are making because – everybody else was using a cone or one guy
calls,
had a cup or, you know, something. But so, yeah, tell us more about, you know, that breakdown there.
Well, there's three major, I mean, there's a lot of alcohol makers, but there's three major brands that most everyone uses.
Mm-hmm.
And it does sound very, very, very realistic. But, you know, prior to 1990, there weren't hoot tubes. Everyone done it by voice if you wanted to do it. So, you know, when the hoot tube come out onto the market, it's tough to compete with that by voice. Right. You got to learn how to do – it's not just oh.
Mm-hmm.
With a hoop tube, you can do that roll in there. So you got to learn to So if you can't do that, you're not even going to place. And, you know, that's another thing, passion. And I finally learned how to do that. And I keep landing in the center, around 12 and 15th and 16th. And anyway, I'm the kind of guy, I hate getting beat.
Sure.
What are they using and why are their calls look different
mm-hmm.
than what I'm buying? So I made my own. And my own owl hooting tube and screamer that. I know that scares you when you're in the woods when you mm-hmm. hear that right by that scream.
Yep.
Well, there's a call that makes that. You can't buy one. They're not out on the market. You got to figure out how to do it.
And yeah.
And I spent $100 at Bass Pro buying distress calls of rabbits and crows and all this stuff. And I found out how they're putting it together, right? And changing reeds and just tweaking things. But anyway, so I went up to the Mid Iowa Classic with two calls that I made and got in the owl hooting contest up there and took third place. So yes, I'm ready to go to nationals now, and I'm not going to do it by voice. I'm taking a call with me.
There you go.
Test it out.
Of course, test it out.
I'm
level,
partial.
Level the playing field.
Right. Yeah, of course I'm partial. I watched the whole hour or so. My wife's like, "Have you been watching
owl hooting?
Owl calling? Well, they were doing other calling at first too. Have you been watching this whole video? Yep, I have been. I mean, I said, what else am I going to watch? You know, some garbage on TV. But so I watched that whole thing. And like I said, of course, I'm partial. But I thought Scott sounded better than the guys that were using the different tubes and stuff.
Yeah.
I
think the judges, too. I mean, you got – who knows? I just think the judges, for 15 years of running tubes, I think they're – you get set on that sound.
They're looking for something specific. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They all sounded good, though. I mean, it's not like nobody's – as far as I could tell, I'm not an expert. But that's what I thought was really cool is some of those. And like I said, you got third in the owl hooting. You got second in something else.
Friction. I took second in friction with my box calls and then took first in the hunter's division. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
The box call – I ran two box calls, and there was a long box and a pocket rocket, and I made them the night before. So
nice.
I made them the night before. When I took them up there, they didn't even have – Amy was even saying, you don't have them all painted up. And, you know, I didn't have my lacquer finish on there, no feathers on there. There was just straight raw wood.
Yeah.
But the sound, I didn't – you know, Friday night, late at night, when I finally hit the sound I was looking for, I didn't want to do –
Don't touch it.
Right. That's it. Don't touch it. I'm not spraying. I'm not here for looks.
Right.
And I had the sound right where I wanted it. So I didn't even. Yeah. They were just bare bone calls when I went up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's made them the night before. So again, that's passion.
Yeah.
You got to be half nuts to go out in the shop, spend 5 hours and try to make something. You're leaving the next morning. You know, that's all out of passion. So
yeah,
that's I love it.
I don't know if you were or not, but like I was saying earlier, these calls you make are really a work of art. And you paint these gorgeous feathers on these things. I'll probably actually put a picture of Cecil's call you made for us.
Yeah.
You know, on there to show what I'm talking about for people. And, you know, you got these beautiful feathers painted on there, and then you number them, and there's different things on there. If you're like me, I can't draw a stick figure. So did you have to learn how to paint too?
Just,
I mean,
right.
That's when you know you're passionate about something, when you got to learn how to do something you don't
really
like.
You should have
really
seen
like
my
doing.
First feather.
Look like a finger?
Yeah. It's pretty rough looking, let me tell you. But over time, I can draw. It's with an oil paint pen.
Mm-hmm.
And I can draw a feather in about 2 minutes.
That's pretty cool.
It took me
so
10 years if I tried.
It would take me so long.
But the first feather, took 15 minutes, and it was ugly. It didn't even look like a feather. You're thinking, what is this?
Well, and that's the other thing I think that sets them apart. You know, I'm not sitting here trying to say that you shouldn't ever buy another call or something, but look at something you buy from Walmart. It's not going to have that look.
The look and quality is a whole other deal.
And when you really sit back and think about it, they're not that much more expensive than a Walmart call.
Right.
I don't know, but $50-$60 somewhere in there is, you know, in the area of what your calls cost. There are certain things that you get what you pay for.
Right.
And my dad grew up saying that to me all the time. You get what you pay for.
Well, then you open their package, the screws aren't tight, a spring's loose.
Yeah.
That CNC router can't see hairline cracks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that wood.
Yeah.
I've taken back many a calls. And, you know, before I made turkey calls, I used Primos box calls, Nightingale box calls, and killed a lot of birds with them.
Yeah.
And one of our favorite calls, the Heartbreaker, me and Uncle Kenny's favorite calls was a Heartbreaker. And but I have taken several back, and how annoying is that when you pay $60 for a call that you buy from Bass Pro or something, that a CNC router makes this call, and they can't see that hairline crack or the hidden knot on the inside. All that will change that sound, you know, or maybe that part of the wood is soft for some reason. But when you're sitting there making it by hand, I sure know it in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. I can tell right off the bat, and I don't even mess around. It goes right into the fire, and I start another one.
Yeah.
But a CNC router can't pick up on that. So that call goes into the package, goes to the shelf, people buy it, and then they get home and they're mad because it don't sound right.
Yeah.
But, you know, and you got to take it back. But that's another quality you're going to get with a handmade call.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
You know, your heart and soul goes into that call, and I'm not going to sell it to anybody if I don't think it's outstanding.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and like we talked about earlier, you don't ever want to be, unless that changes, but you don't necessarily want to be making 10,000 calls a year.
There's no way I could.
Right. And
not unless CNC router came into the picture.
You have to start compromising some of the things you're talking
about. Exactly. You're going to compromise quality.
Yep.
If you mass produce them.
So a lot of what you do is by people saying you need to buy a call from Scott Wilper. And those people stop saying that when you start putting out garbage.
Right.
So you have to, you know, do that. I remember growing up, my dad taught me how to do drywall, and that's what my dad's done his whole life. And he actually just did some stuff at your dad's house, Scott. But it's nobody's going to call you if the last guy you worked for, you didn't do a good job.
Right.
And they call and say, what do you think of this guy? And he did a horrible job. So, you know, when you're not Walmart or whoever, you got to always put out good stuff. And that
quality sells itself.
Sure, yeah. You don't have to even advertise, although we're going to do it for you. But you don't have to, you know.
Right,
so,
right.
Well, like I said, we wanted to do a turkey show. We know we started, you know, just how stuff works. Our show started on Memorial Day, so it was after Missouri turkey season was over. But we thought, man, we can't really, we can't wait a whole year to talk about turkey, can we?
No. So, we'd talk turkey year-round.
Sure,
absolutely.
So we thought, you know what, we're just going to do it, and we wanted to have a show about turkey before. So
absolutely.
What else we got here?
Well, I mean, one thing, I mean, talking about year-round different things, right behind me is a bobcat, and that makes me think, you know, we talked a little bit before. We're getting close to hatch, right? I mean, I'm not an expert by any means, but go through the process that's happening now. I mean, then we have
the predators,
hatch is happening. Mm-hmm. So they've been on nest for a while.
28 days. So yeah, some are hatching now. We've had that monster rain.
Yep.
3-inch rain and the creeks got out.
Which is not good.
Not good. So how many hens had a nest in the low area?
Yeah.
There goes 15 eggs.
Now,
if it's early enough.
Yeah.
Right now, probably not.
If it would be too late.
2 weeks ago, yeah, they'll rebreed. They'll try. Some will. So, hatch is going on now. I would say, what are we at, June 5th?
Yeah, June 6th.
June 6th. I would say right now, 70% of the nests that's made it, let's say, have hatched.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just a few of the late breeders that are probably sitting right now.
Okay. And let's talk about the predator to that egg, that nest. I mean, you mentioned before, kind of go through the number one predator and what are the risks, I guess, out there for that nest in the early stages, and then after hatch, what are the risks now?
The risk right now for, again, this is just, I'm no scientist by no means, but this is just in a hunter perspective that my knowledge of chasing these things for 25 years. So, but the number one right now, or let's say two weeks ago, you know, a hen has to sit on a nest for 28 days for the hatch. And let's say they lay anywhere from 10 to 15 eggs is the average. So she'll lay an egg a day.
Right.
One egg a day, but she will not sit on the nest until the last egg is laid.
Okay. And then she'll sit on that nest for like 23 hours a day, correct?
Correct. Right.
And so just she'll, to get up to go.
She'll roost. She'll roost near the nest. You know, every day lay one egg, kind of cover it up, go do her thing. The next day, when she lays her last egg is when she'll finally start sitting on the nest 23 hours a day, basically. She takes 1 hour a day off to go eat. And here's the cool thing. Tell me there ain't a plan out there in this world. Somebody overseeing this all. She will fly from the nest, to and from the nest. When she goes eats for that 1 hour and to defecate, fly to and from the nest. Why do you think that is?
So nothing follows her scent.
Scent trail.
Yep.
Is that not cool or what? You think amazing. She would walk up to her nest and sit down? Nope.
A pea-sized brain, smart enough to do that.
A pea-sized brain. Right. Is this not cool? Flies from the nest 50, 75 yards out so she don't leave a scent trail. Does her thing, eats, drinks, and then we'll fly back and sit for another 23 hours. But, yes, so when the last egg's laid, 28 days later, okay, they hatch. But during that 28 days and then the first 10 to 12 days before, how many ever eggs she lays, them eggs are exposed on ground level for quite a period of time, if you think about it. And the biggest nest busters of all are raccoons.
Yeah.
Every dead raccoon is one happy hen. So all the coon hunters out there, you know, coon predator hunting has went down. You know, prices of hides have dropped, stuff like this. So predator hunting has went down. There's still people that do it, but I have seen more raccoons in the last 10 years than I think, 20 years ago, I don't think I hardly ever seen a raccoon. They're just everywhere right now.
Right. They are.
And they're stealing eggs. I've got a field right up the road from me right here that you guys drove by when you came in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably a 30-acre field, and the grass is waist tall. And I know there's a hen out there.
Yeah.
I've seen her in the gravel road pecking rocks.
Yeah.
They got to get rocks in their crawl. That's how they break their food up.
Yeah.
When you see them eating alongside the gravel road and they get their rocks in there. Well, she come out of that field, and I seen her go back into that field. She's got a nest in there somewhere. Well, this was just 2 days ago. I turned the corner coming home from work. And a raccoon comes out. What is a raccoon doing at 4 o'clock in the afternoon coming out of a field?
Mm-hmm.
Comes out in the road, looks at me, and then goes right back into the field.
Stooping where he wasn't supposed to be.
Well, right. He's out there looking for eggs. Raccoons are the biggest. Skunks would be number two. And possums and snakes are big up there, too, probably number three and four in there. So them are your biggest egg busters is your raccoons. So the fewer raccoons, the more turkeys are going to make it, at least hatch.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Now you've got a dozen birds that are the size of a baseball that every hoot owl and hawk and bobcat and coyote and fox is after. Yeah. Turkey's got a rough life.
Yeah. It's hard. Well, and I think, you know, I read something, there's about 300,000 or so turkey in Missouri, something like that. Of course, at one point in time, we had nothing.
Right.
You know, then we got the flock back to where it became
strong
enough that other states were using our birds to reestablish their populations.
Yeah, transfer.
But it seems like our turkey populate. It just seems like turkey are so fragile because I might have been wrong by reading this, but something like over half of all the eggs that are laid are never going to even hatch.
They don't even make it. Half of them don't make it.
And then when they hatch,
Them half.
Yeah, those half are going to then. So you're only talking about a small percentage of eggs that lay ever make it to an adult turkey or even a juvenile, you know, Jake or something. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it makes it.
And that's why each hen lays 10 to 15 eggs, you know, because that half and that half of that half that don't make it.
2 to 3, you're only going to make it out of that.
Kind of law of numbers type of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The drier the spring, and I'm going to specify the month of May. The drier the May is, and the less raccoons you have in your area, and the drier May you get, the more turkeys you're going to have. You know, and you get 2 or 3 years of a couple dry springs, and you know, do your predator hunting in the winter and get some of them raccoons taken out. And if you can get lucky and get a couple dry springs in a row, your population will just double.
Yeah,
like that quick.
You know, it makes me feel bad when we were doing we predator hunt and we were out doing a coyote tournament we were in. I don't remember which one.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on one of my properties, and we had our call only probably 20 yards from where I was sitting. And as soon as that call started, I had this gigantic raccoon come and stand within 5 feet of that call. I didn't shoot him because it wasn't a coyote.
Yep.
I should have smoked them. Now that you've been talking about this,
because I bet you will next time. Now
I've never seen a coon that big. I'm not kidding you. He was gigantic, and he stood. And that call had stopped when he came up to it, and he stood right on his hind legs. And that call started again. I never seen that coon move so fast.
Did he take off?
He was gone because he didn't know. He knew something was going on, but I kind of feel bad now. I didn't let him have it after talking about this.
Right. So, yeah, the nest is pretty fragile. And then, like you say, when they're born, too, it's about roughly 2 weeks from when they're born, they can fly a little bit.
Okay.
They can actually get off the ground.
That's a lot quicker than I figured.
Yeah. That 2 weeks, if they can get by that 2 weeks, their survival rating goes up 50%.
Oh, wow.
Hmm.
If that 2 weeks once they're born where they can get on a limb, if they can just get 3 or 4 feet off the ground,
right,
then they're away from most of the predators at that point.
Yep.
Now, they can't, you know, the hoot owls at night, and you got the hawks, but hunting them too. But, you know, getting off the ground is a big deal. And so that 2 weeks, which is happening these next 2 weeks from the ones that are being born right now, is pretty crucial. And again, the drier the better.
Yeah.
You know, you think of a wet dog. A dry dog, go come here, and you're all in its face and petting it and everything. But a wet dog, you're like, man, you stink. Right? Well, a wet turkey's the same way. Their scent is double.
Magnified
when they're wet. And that's how predators can smell and pick up on them.
Yeah.
So your wet springs not only hurts your eggs being washed away, but now you got a wet turkey.
Yes, scent. Yeah.
The scent that the bobcat, that the coyote's going to pick up on.
Yeah,
so,
and this has been a wet year for at least us in our area. You know, it seems like we're getting rain every couple of days.
Right.
So
usually your little half-inch and one-inch thunderstorm rains that blow through pretty quick really don't hurt too bad. But, you know, we had that 4-inch gully washer 3-4 days ago. Them are not good ones.
Right.
The ones that rain all day long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but yeah, there's a lot of factors like that come into play. But,
well, like every episode we've ever done, I've learned more than I knew before.
Absolutely. And that's what it's about.
Yeah. And that's, yeah. But before we hop off, do you want to give people any information as far as how they can get a hold of you for a call? You got a Facebook page. We know that.
Yeah. My phone number is on the Facebook. We just Google Wilper. Custom Calls or Scott Wilper, and you'll see today's day and age, you can find just about anybody.
Sure. Yep.
You know, so, but
we'll
I do
a
have
link
a,
to that.
I'm pretty old school. I'll let everybody know it now. I have a Facebook, FaceTime, Faceback, whatever you want to call that.
Yep.
I've got it, but my wife and kids take care of it for me. I've got 4 daughters, and they are well educated in this area. So
more than any of us are.
Exactly. Absolutely. So, but if you look my name up, I do have a FaceTime page there, so you can find my phone number there. Give me a call, and we will make. I'll make any call that you're looking for, sound wise.
Yeah.
We are at the end of the year right now, so I do not have any pre-ready.
Yeah.
So it'll be a couple weeks.
And what hurry are you in it right now anyway?
That's right. Like you got till fall.
Yeah.
Fall. Well, what better time to get a custom call? You know?
Right.
Well, and like what we were saying, we'll put a link to the Facebook page on our little there's some show notes summary that come out when our show comes out. We'll put a link in there, and then I'll probably, like I said, post a picture of the one I have from you, just because
loaded on this.
They
show.
Need to see how see gorgeous yeah. they are. They really are gorgeous calls. Even if you just had someone do a basic one, your basic calls still have that beautiful, you know, feather on there, and they all have a number, and so they're beautiful.
But what you do is you go to Walmart, and for about $5, you get a 6-pack of black socks, and you put your calls in that black sock. So when you take the beautiful call out to the woods, you got a black sock protector. Pretty
there you
cheap.
Go.
That makes sense.
Slides right in and out.
Yep. That's what I was telling Jeff when he gave me that one. As I'm like, I don't think I'm gonna use that thing. That's too pretty.
Yep.
And it has a lot of meaning to me. So it'll end up getting displayed on a shelf with something. But
yeah, you don't have to put it on a sock if you're gonna keep it on.
Yeah,
sock,
no. Right? I may have to dust it. Is what I'll have to do on that.
Maybe
one.
When Nate kills a turkey, you can put it beside that. I don't know.
Well, you might be waiting for a while.
So. I say, yeah, before we get off here, give us one more good. I think it's amazing how you do it.
Oh,
mouth.
Man.
Give us
everybody
a good one.
Listening, this is all by mouth that Scott is doing this.
We'll
with.
Do a full cadence here. This is something I would do at Nationals.
All by
that's
mouth.
That's amazing.
That's a good spot to end. I think
so. It's been a great podcast.
Well, Scott, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it. I mean, this is what we
it.
Enjoy doing.
I appreciate
absolutely
it. Thank you.
So, all right, well, until next time, we'll talk to y'all later.
See you on the next one.
All right, that's the show today. Had an awesome time talking with Andy and Scott today. Scott is a real good guy, salt of the earth type of guy who has a real passion for turkey and turkey call making, and he really puts 100% effort into every call, you know, he produces for people. So I think that's really awesome. Scott didn't mention it, so I'm going to throw it in real quick. He can be reached on his Facebook page, Wilper Custom Calls. His last name is spelled WILPER. So if you just search Wilper Custom Calls in Facebook, you'll be able to find it. And we'll drop a link also on the show notes. So hope you all enjoyed that show. We had a lot of fun, like I said, and we will talk to you all next week.